This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is the Breakfast Grill. Can you buy peace of mind? Some would say that it helps when you sign up for an insurance policy, but is that really the case? So to help us answer that question, and also the implications COVID-19 has had on the insurance sector, we speak to Lee Sang Hui, CEO of Manulife Malaysia Berhad. Now, thank you once again for being on The Breakfast Grill. You made your maiden appearance in May last year. So let's start with COVID-19, because this has been, of course, the great disruption or black swan event that I think no one could have predicted. Now, being one of the two listed international insurance companies on Bursa Malaysia, I'm sure there was a business contingency plan, especially since it's a Bank Negara requirement. But this pandemic, let's face it, was unprecedented, and I'm sure no BCP plan envisaged such a radical change to our lives. So how fast did it take for Manulife to pivot?
Top priority for Manulife, and I think insurance companies as general, is to ensure the health and safety of our team, customers and partners. Now, in terms of the pandemic, it's been unprecedented for sure. And as you said, there's not enough planning that can go that could actually address all the issues that we faced at the start of this pandemic. So for us, we were so fortunate that it only took us about 3 days to mobilize staff for insurance and asset management 100% to work, arranged to work from home. And so we managed through that all the way through until May 4th. And then during that whole process, we managed that we didn't have any disruption of our business and services to our customers. Fortunate to work with the industry as well as the regulator, introduce a range of special measures and coverage benefits to alleviate the anxieties on the cost around related to COVID. So we offered a special assistance program that goes up to 1 million ringgit. We waived the 30-day waiting period and then introduced a premium deferment plan in collaboration with other financial institutions and digital in our interaction, enabling remote selling as well as remote policy servicing claims, and then introduced an e-recruiting app that allowed those interested in joining our business to sign on without having to meet face-to-face.
But I just want to know, right, how badly affected have you been by COVID-19 from a business perspective, especially sales? I mean, agents couldn't actually meet their clients, they couldn't sign up new policies. Was there rising costs whilst there was lower revenue? And even from the frontliners' perspective, how were they able to operate in the office without endangering their health?
Well, for Manulife, we really had a strong start this year. In the first quarter, our growth was quite considerable and our market share actually increased. Now, the MCO was announced in the middle of March, but the really dip started happening definitely in April, because it was just at that time was to make sure that everybody was safe and that we adhered to the instructions on MCO. So I would say April was one of our toughest months. And so it's the runway would have been, you know, a lot less than what we had in the prior months. And then that continued, continued to May. But when we put in the remote selling and the remote servicing capabilities and equip our agents to make sure that, you know, they can deliver the services, we saw, doubling of sales from April. And then in June, which is just ended, sales recovered even more. Yeah, so we're okay relative it's hard to compare what other companies are doing.
Now, when you were here last, we did talk about digital efforts, something you just mentioned. So what gaps did COVID-19 actually magnify? Because previously you said that agents should be able to complete 50% of their applications online. Has that been achieved? And also from a customer perspective, could they contact you remotely?
Right. So I'll give you, just leading it from last year, as I said on the show, Manulife would go ahead to implement electronic submissions. And so we did that and built it. And actually, I'm glad for the team that they were able to launch the electronic submission service right during MCO. So extremely happy about that. And so we have a number of agents who are on test pilot now in going through and making sure that everything is good. So by the end of the year, we're hoping to get at least 50% of our active agents onto this platform. Now, coming into addressing directly on the COVID in front, you know, we went ahead and then implemented very quick solutions for remote selling and remote services. What we're finding is that a lot of customers do prefer to have advice given to them, you know, over a longer period and perhaps even with one or two face-to-face meetings. So we have to definitely respect that. But in the meantime, like I said, with you know, in urgent situations, we're able to service it.
So at the end of the day, how much was actually sold via your digital efforts, via the website?
Well, if you look at our you know, public website, every product is available. So, you know, descriptions. I'm really proud of our public website. It's probably, I would say, one of the more user-friendly and dynamic to look at. But there's two particular products that you can buy directly online from us. And these are protection products. And so it's a term policy. Actually, now, come to think, we have three. There's a term product, there's a medical card product, and as well as a CI product. And so, you know, in terms of
critical illness, right?
Yes, critical illness. So now in terms of percentage of sales, it's still quite low. It's going to be less than 5%.
Do you have an eventual target? Because I'm sure it's, in a way, much more cost-effective to sell via the website. You don't have to pay your agents any commission.
Well, you know, if you think about it, acquisition cost is all part of it. So whether the acquisition cost is going to pay for agents' activities, or your acquisition cost to get your search engine, you know, to get you in front of the line. All those acquisitions costs add up. And as far as I see, face-to-face and an agent-led or financial institution-led acquisition costs may be high. But if you look at the acquisition costs related to online, that's not small either, because the amount that you need to pay to the likes of the search engines or even some of the fintech companies is going to be quite high.
Yeah, but won't the cost actually come down in time as more products are actually sold over the website? I mean, it's a volume game, right? So, and then you would have the benefits of economies of scale.
Yes, and I think that sometime in the future that may come down, but that will also mean a lot more closer collaboration amongst the parties to be able to do that. But right now, you know, like for instance, if you wanted to get your product to be you know, advertised online, the costs are, I think, probably similar or if not higher than acquisition costs related to face-to-face selling.
Okay, and then I want to look at fintech or insurtech more broadly, because recently Great Eastern Singapore, they bought a 21% stake in Boost, an e-wallet player connected to Axiata. This is Malaysia's largest fintech deal, valued at 300 million ringgit. So it's no small sum. From my perspective, GE is looking at using Boost to go digital in a big way, maybe like a reverse Tencent or Alibaba, which, if you ask me, are the real threats to insurance companies. So these large, giant e-wallet players competing with insurance companies by offering insurance products. So how are you going to respond?
That's definitely a great direction, and really kudos to the GE to making those efforts. Again, I think there's two fronts. It's that probably from a pure investment point of view, that would need to make sense. And you're actually buying shares in a company, and then you have to look at return on investments. And then also definitely it would include the synergy benefits of having, you know, working between shareholders to benefit each other's business. So those two aspects would definitely have had to been reviewed and thoroughly assessed. But I think the direction is a good one. And that's because, you know, consumer interest as well as their, you know, what they're looking for would be a lot easier to get, especially for insurance.
So how can you compete in a space like this? Because, for example, GE, right now they have reach to, I presume, the unbanked. And, you know, they are able to market on a massive scale without relying on agents, just using a digital platform which anyone can just download on the phone. So how is Manulife going to manage or pivot in this new competitive environment?
Well, we're still small. We're actually one of the faster growing companies. And that, you know, we do obtain, you know, our strategies for omnichannel. And, you know, GE and the other big companies, they have established their businesses for a long time and also have the financial means to be able to do deals like that. But I believe that, you know, insurance is still a people-to-people business and it requires a high touch. And so over time, I think that, you know, hopefully a bit of polarization, I think there's going to be a space where insurance are very simplified insurance products, can be purchased online, you know, without much prompting and advice from the advisors. But then there's going to be a level where, you know, there's a whole long-term commitment with a lot of, you know, other things in stake that do require the appropriate and careful advice from the advisor. We're definitely going to focus on both. But at this stage, our priorities would be based on our face-to-face strategy.
Yeah, and I want to go back to this, you know, what you say about, in a way, micro-insurance, right, where the products are very simplified and or a pay-per-use model. Is this something that Manulife is also considering? Because if you look at Malaysia and the environment, the penetration rate for insurance has been 55% for a few years. So perhaps the pay-per-use model insurance or micro-insurance is the way to go forward.
Very good concept. In fact, I follow that very closely. Personally, I'm so interested in that type of a model. I'm seeing that from auto insurance. I've seen that coming in from like motorcycle insurance, especially for, you know, the riders. They call them riders. I think that like in Malaysia, they're called Grab Delivery. If you try to get insurance as a, you know, motorcycle operator, it's very costly. And in fact, it really doesn't make sense to have pay insurance and try to do that business as an operator. But if you can find, you know, as pay as you go, right? So based on the number of kilometers and the hours they actually used for delivery, then it starts to make sense. And I've seen that work very well in Korea, the market that I was from. But in terms of products that have a very long-term commitment and that do require underwriting at the beginning, and then on the claims level with very high touch, you're going to need to have to make sure that you have very good front end and that so the you know delivery of that new business is going to be seamless. And then also a very good backend for online touch points so that the delivery of the services is also seamless. So it's going to take, I think, a lot more time for on the life side, life insurance side, so that we get to a stage where we have products that are like that, you know, on demand.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Lee Seng Hui, Group CEO of Manulife Malaysia. Up next, the all-important financials. And is doubling market share possible in these markets? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Lee Seng Hui, Group CEO of Manulife Malaysia. Just a moment ago, we were discussing how COVID-19 impacted their business and is the company ready for InsurTech. I want to start with the financials, actually. And I'm going to use that to see where growth is coming from, or maybe the lack of growth. Because like you say, 2019 numbers were pretty good. I saw a recovery in terms of new business sales, up 43% with contribution from Banker, which recovered nicely by 62%. But okay, we've established 2019 was a good year after a challenging 2018. What about 2020? Do you think you can maintain this pace of growth?
Like I said, you know, we started off the year very good. First quarter growth was registered very well. Now, you know, the whole second quarter is MCO period. And I believe that the team was very resilient and we were able to perform you know, above our own potential in what's such a, you know, a very difficult time. I believe that, you know, for us setting the pace again, third quarter would be a restart and that for the remaining of the year, we'll make all the best efforts to accelerate growth.
But will 2020 numbers be flat compared to 2019? Or do you think actually there will be a decline considering COVID-19 put most Malaysians in some form of, you know, lockdown for 2-3 months?
Well, you know, what we're seeing now is at least on our bank channel, you know, we had a good recovery last year. And I believe that the momentum would definitely continue for the bank channel. For the agency channel, what we're seeing is that our agency force is able to deliver on the recruiting front. Now, we will probably do as much or slightly more than what we did last year in terms of actual agent recruiting. But we're also seeing a lot of recruits are coming in from disrupted industries like the travel area, pretty obvious ones. You know, they're looking for the additional income or even to make a career change at this time. So for us at our scale and our size, I believe that, you know, it would be a challenging year for sure, and I can't deny that. But in terms of growth, we're hoping to see a little bit of growth.
But do you think sales will actually slow down? Because in the last few years, right, Manulife...
sales did slow down in the second quarter. We're hoping that for the agency channel as well as the banker channel, we would be back to prior year levels starting from the month of July.
But aren't you concerned, especially for the investment products, less so the protection product, that we know COVID-19 is going to bring the inevitable recession? And with that, there might be job cuts. People might have less disposable income. So same for your asset management business, which only has just started to show a profit. Do you see people being more reluctant to give you cash for investments?
What we're seeing is, gross sales for asset management was still very good. Net sales, because of market volatility, we've seen some redemptions. But net, our asset levels have held up for asset management. And then for insurance, what we're seeing is that there's a little bit more lapse, and that's because I think the priorities are somewhat shifted. But with the proper communication and the right servicing, mean that many of the customers are, going back to making their payments. My concern is not so much the volatility of the equity markets, because that's gonna come, and I think that probably the worst in terms of the major volatilities is behind us. I think what's going to happen in the next 6 to 12 months would be about corporate earnings, and that should be, I think that a lot of that is also priced in. The bigger concern is going to be the low interest rate environment. And how will Manulife as well as other insurers weather it? And this would mean that we have to offer less interest rate sensitive products, and then more actively match our assets to liabilities, okay, and investing for the long term. And I would say, and thirdly, is to diversify investments to asset types that are going to be less interest sensitive, which is things like the real estate investment trust, as well as alternative investments.
Okay, since you brought up investments, right, I looked at the first quarter numbers. We already saw fair value losses of close to 300 million ringgit there. So yes, it's an accounting entry, but probably indicative of what is to come. So are we likely to see investment yields come under pressure, especially since compared to your peers? Manulife's equity weighting, I think last year was still high at 25% or thereabouts. Would you need to reassess this strategic asset allocation again, something that you did already in 2018?
Yes, we reassessed in 2018. We also made some changes in 2019. I believe our equity portfolio for certain segregated assets are lowered. These temporary fair value losses in assets due to equities is basically that, because then we make also adjustments in long term as well. And, what was volatile in the first quarter is actually also returned in much of the second quarter as well. So again, we're pretty much quoting past numbers at the moment.
And let's talk about market share, because you mentioned that it's done pretty well. Now, when you hear last, I think the target was to double market share to above 4%. But I might have an outdated number, because I looked at the ratings agency Malaysia report from 2019, which shows that market share actually fell to 2.2% in 2018 from 2.8% in 2017. So what is the current number now?
So in 2018, you're right, it's a 2.2. In 2019, that rose to about 2.9, and we kept the same number 9 in the market, number 9 above the life insurers. And then in 2020 first quarter, our number is 3.5%, and we went up a notch to number 8.
But still a bit shy from that doubling of market share, right? So what prevents Manulife from achieving this? Because like you say, you've been very active in recruiting agents. But why isn't this reflected in market share? Or is it because your agents aren't performing as well as you hoped?
Oh, our agents are definitely performing. Like I said, first quarter 2020, the market share was 3.5%. So that's a pretty decent jump from the fall of 2019. Now, it's a bit difficult to see where we end up in the second quarter or for the remainder of the year. But, you know, with our next Manulife strategies in place, with the six pillars that you know, that are going at full force, I think it's just a matter of time. I mean, we may need probably another year or so to achieve that, but that's probably within, it is definitely within our expectations.
But I still think that organic growth probably looks very challenging. It's very competitive. After all, the top three account for 60% of market share and penetration has been flat at 55%. So is one possibility inorganic? So in other words, like a merger or consolidation with another insurance company. So buy that market share.
After all, parent Manulife is said to be a front runner to acquire Aviva Vietnam. So are there any companies in your sights here in Malaysia, for example?
We're always on the lookout, for sure. But again, you know, that that form of a transaction would have to make sense on its own.
Because AXA Affin, who is number 13 in the Malaysian market, 13 largest, is said to be for sale. So is this something you would consider, or is their market share too small, or do you have bigger aspirations to maybe buy one of the top five, for example?
We're aware of that transaction, but I don't really have a comment on that position.
On that note, thank you for your time today. Joining me on the Breakfast Grill this morning was Lee Sang Hui, Group CEO of Manulife. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.